For SearchSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westerveld. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for Wednesday, October 25th, 2006. This week, Microsoft turns over its email authentication framework to its Open Specification Promise program. We'll also discuss web-based application security with the Chief Technology Officer of VirtualForge, and infected iPods threaten corporate networks. But first, our top story. Microsoft will make its Sender ID framework freely available under its Open Specification Promise program. Sender ID is a framework for email authentication. Microsoft also plans to develop a program to share malware samples with its security partners. The announcements were made at the RSA conference in Nice, France. The Sender ID framework is designed to reduce spam and other unwanted email. It works by verifying the origin of email messages. The Sender ID framework is being made available to help push Sender ID as a standard in the fight against spam and phishing. This week in our Security Spotlight, we'll look at web-based application security with Andreas Wiegenstein. Andreas is Chief Technology Officer of VirtualForge. VirtualForge is a German-based security consultancy that focuses mainly on security for SAP applications. Andreas recently spoke at the SAP TechEd conference, where he identified what he considers the top five application security threats. But first, a word from our sponsor.
As an information security professional, you've no doubt heard of Nmap, the popular freeware tool. It can be a huge help in the enterprise when searching for available hosts and services or pinpointing open ports. However, installing, configuring, and running Nmap in the enterprise is no easy task. With that in mind, SearchSecurity.com has teamed up with security expert Michael Cobb to create an Nmap technical guide. This guide details exactly how you can use Nmap to make your organization more secure. This guide is available for free at searchsecurity.com/nmap. Again, that's searchsecurity.com/nmap. Check it out today.
And we're back. Andreas, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Let's start off with your presentation at SAP TechEd last September in Las Vegas. You said that web applications, particularly custom-based custom-built applications on NetWeaver, are at risk. Can you explain that?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, you have to consider that all custom-built web applications are potentially at risk, which means not only those based on NetWeaver, just to get a basic understanding of that. So you can also make mistakes in other languages like PHP, ColdFusion, .NET, JSP, and so forth, and also on other platforms. And my presentation was focused on the most common problems developers are faced with when they are developing on top of NetWeaver. So this is basically a subset of what can go wrong when you design web applications.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And to further clarify, it's not that NetWeaver itself has new types of vulnerabilities. It's more like it's the same type of vulnerability as everywhere, but NetWeaver can solve some of them. So, and I was talking about the residual risk, which means the things that the NetWeaver environment cannot necessarily handle for you as a developer and where you have to pay attention. So some of those problems are, for example, SQL injection. So every developer that develops on NetWeaver and builds their own SQL statements to read data from the backend, they have to make sure that they don't accidentally include user data into their SQL strings when they send them to the SQL interpreter. So that would be a possibility for an attacker to inject SQL code into a statement and read arbitrary data from the database, for example. The other risks I was talking to in my presentation at TechEd are referring to developers that build HTML web pages, which means they do this by concatenating strings that include the tags and rendering those strings themselves to the system. So they don't let the framework do it, they do it themselves. And if they do this, they are faced with four problems. commonly known as forceful browsing, cross-site scripting, cookie poisoning, and client validation.
Now, wait a second. These threats that you've identified, this goes beyond NetWeaver, right? I mean, this affects all developers producing web-based applications.
Right, and I was picking the ones that are important to know when you develop on NetWeaver, because NetWeaver cannot stop you from doing mistakes here.
You mentioned cookie poisoning. What is that? Is this something that's relatively new?
No, these are not exactly new attacks, but these are just attacks that are quite common. So, and you can easily introduce a mistake when you build an application here. So cookie poisoning means that you rely on the fact that if you create a cookie on the server, send it to the client, you will get it back unaltered from the client. But the point is that hackers don't use standard browsers. They have different tools, and they can modify the cookies. So this assumption is false. And if you, for example, place business data in a cookie, like the prices for items a user buys and puts in a shopping cart, then those prices could be tampered with by a hacker because he can alter them. Another problem is reliance on client-side validation, which means a user builds a system and performs some important checks on the browser, on the client, for example, for performance reasons, and doesn't repeat those checks again on the server. And again, if a hacker uses a modified tool instead of a browser, these checks can simply be bypassed. And that can happen if you build your own validation in the client, if you build your own HTML pages yourself, and you don't let the framework do it for you.
And the bottom line, what does that mean? The attacker just gets right in?
Well, if an attacker sees you do an input validation check on the client, then the attacker looks, okay, which is the exact request that will be sent to the server, and then he just forges or builds a malicious request that contains the data that should have been filtered. So this way you can simply bypass the client check, because in the end it's just an HTTP packet that will be sent to the server. If the server doesn't do input validation, bad luck. Mm-hmm. So don't do it on the client. I mean, you can do it on the client if you repeat it on the server, but don't do it on the client alone.
Andreas, are attacks becoming more sophisticated?
First of all, it's definitely true. Attacks on web applications are becoming more sophisticated. But the sad truth is that the vast majority of web applications today still has all the trivial bugs inside that are easy to exploit. So in other words, an attacker doesn't have to use a sophisticated attack to get in. They can use a simple one, because the developers didn't pay attention for them in the first place. So they just, I mean, if you're a hacker, you go for the low-hanging fruit first. Mm-hmm. Why bother with the complex stuff? You can get trivial vulnerabilities at every corner. So and that means...
If you're a developer, start with the basics.
Pardon?
If you're a developer, then start with the basics.
Exactly. I mean, you don't need a plan B for the complex stuff if you don't even have a plan A for the trivial stuff. So, to get back to your question, some examples of the more sophisticated attacks are, for example, an AJAX worm that was written by some guy as a proof of concept that could propagate to other systems, as well as a port scanner written in JavaScript, which means that you can potentially have a page vulnerable to cross-site scripting, and someone can inject a port scanner into that page you open on your intranet, and that scanner then starts finding all the active systems inside your corporate environment and post that back to an attacker. This is what I think is sort of a more complex attack.
Are these AJAX attacks on the rise as more sites use them?
The attacks we see in AJAX are technologically not exactly new. It's just a different way to do the attack.
I see. Okay.
Because in AJAX, what AJAX basically does, it creates requests to a server and reads the result back. This is exactly what the browser does, but just in the JavaScript level. So it was, most of that was possible before. It's just easier now if you have AJAX.
Mm-hmm.
The only issue I see with AJAX is that if you are a consumer and you're filling in a web form, for example, you want to buy a book and put in your credit card data and stuff like that, with standard web applications, you could at the last moment say, oops, no, I don't submit that form. I'm having second thoughts about trusting the bookshop. I want to buy that. But now with AJAX, the web developers have the theoretical possibility of submitting every form field the moment you fill it in, instead of waiting for you to fill in the whole form. So they can send all your credit card information, whatever, without you noticing it to the system. This is some type of a problem I can see from AJAX.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could probably spend a whole program talking about emerging threats, but I think the bottom line here is that developers are failing to build in security when developing an application. Is that your view as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the top reason for that is that most developers still do not understand the problem of application security. Usually, developers write code, and then they verify the code for their requirements list, and they say, well, I had to write in these five features. They work. Work is done. Finished. They don't test for the things, for the security side effects that are in there, because they're basically not aware of the problems in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So you should first create awareness that those problems exist to help developers build more secure applications. And once they understand this, I think everything else is going automatically.
But why are they failing to do this? I mean, is the argument that it just takes too long? Is it too difficult? Does it delay projects?
Well, this, of course, is also true. Sometimes they don't have the budget for it. It takes longer than standard development, definitely. But I think the prime reason is people don't know about the security implications of what they program. If you build a web page with HTML and you just write again what the user just filled in, nobody understands, or most people don't understand, that you can execute script and have a cross-site scripting problem, for example, if you do that. If you don't encode the user input, and there are a lot of risks like that. And the key reason is that each technology you're using, if it is SQL or HTML or HTTP or XML, they all have some side effects that you don't immediately think of when you write applications using them. Hackers know those side effects, and that's the problem. Developers don't.
Mm-hmm. And with that, we're out of time. Andreas Wiegenstein, thank you.
You're welcome.
And finally this week, infected iPods could cause trouble for corporate networks. Apple said that since September 12th, some iPods left its manufacturer with a virus that typically affects computers running Microsoft Windows. So far, Apple said less than 1% of video iPods are affected. Only 25 reports of the problem have been received by Apple. Apple said the iPod Nano, iPod Shuffle, and Mac OS X are not affected. And that's Security Wire Weekly from CertSecurity.com. The latest corporate security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at CertSecurity.com/news. And you can download past episodes of Security Wire Weekly on our podcast page at CertSecurity.com/podcast. For now, I'm Rob Westerveld. Have a great day.